the show that travels America to bring you the voice of the people, thanks to the makers of... Tonight, your two Vox Poppers, Warren Hull and Ed Sullivan, pinch-hitting for Parks Johnson, travel to Indianapolis to bring you a Vox Pop biography of Ernie Pyle. Tonight's Vox Pop program opens Ernie Pyle Week in Indianapolis, which will be climaxed next Friday by the world premiere of the Lester Cowan production of The Story of G.I. Joe. And tonight in the Coliseum in Indianapolis are the people who will bring you the story of Ernie Pyle.
I'm Ernie Pyle's father.
I'm his Aunt Mary.
A boyhood neighbor.
I went to college with him.
I'm a G.I. He was in Italy with me.
I'm a war correspondent who went through four campaigns with him.
And here are 8,000 Hoosiers who knew him and loved him.
This is Warren Hull. This is Ed Sullivan, and there's another person who had to do with Ernie, and we'll hear from him later. Okay, Warren.
Well, right now, here's a man who still lives down the road a piece from the Pyle farm where he and Ernie played together as barefoot boys. He's 42, no longer barefoot, but he still has cheeks of tan. From the quiet countryside near the little town of Dana, Indiana, Glenn Saxton. Glenn, we know you have a lot of acres out there. What's waiting on you right now?
About 20 tons of clover hay to be baled.
20 tons of hay?
That's right.
Well, when are you going to get it in, tomorrow?
Whenever it gets dry enough.
Oh, the rain, huh?
That's right.
Well, it's sort of a gamble, isn't it? Huh?
It's a gamble, you bet.
What kind of a farm do you have?
It's a stock farm.
Mm-hmm. Feed and stock
feed.
And so on? Are you growing many pork chops for us?
Well, that's all depends.
What do you mean?
Well, how many pigs the sows have and what the OPA let us do.
Oh. Well, you farmers are gamblers, I can see that. You're just like the fellows in Wall Street, aren't you?
Well, just about when we don't wear the strapped pants.
Well, I know a couple of farmers who are listening with a great deal of interest right now. Mr. and Mrs. Parks Johnson down on Sabino Ranch, Wimberley, Texas. And incidentally, I hope that Louise isn't making Parks work too hard on his vacation. Glenn, you and Ernie went to the same country school, didn't you?
That's right.
How far away was it?
About 2.5 miles.
To walk?
No, sure. Went in a horse-drawn hack.
Horse-drawn hack?
That's right.
Well, I forget. That was in the old days, wasn't it?
Sure was.
Well, you know the way schoolboys are. Did you trade lunches with Ernie?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, what did you have?
Well, I would have meat sandwiches and chicken sandwiches, and he'd have the best cookies in the county.
Yeah.
And I'd give him the meat sandwiches, and he'd give me the cookies.
Yeah.
Then he would take the bread and throw it away and eat the meat.
Well, what did you think Ernie would be when he grew up?
I thought he'd be a race car driver.
Race car driver?
Yes.
Why?
Well, he was all the time driving little automobiles he would make at home.
Oh, really? You played with him? You had a car like that?
Yes, sure.
Where did you ride in it?
In an old gravel pit there by his home.
What do you mean? You rode it in a gravel pit?
Down a gravel pit.
Oh, really? Down
the
sides?
That's right.
Well, that must be pretty steep.
About 40 feet we would go as we got started.
Yeah. Get bunged up?
And once in a while we'd turn over.
Yeah. Say, by the way, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I want to be a farmer, but I've changed my mind since.
Well, Glenn, you and all the other farmers out this way have been doing a terrific job, and we thank you. And we're looking for more pork chops. Don't forget that. Did you see Ernie when he came back to visit Dana?
Yes, sure. I saw him after he came back from the European war zone.
He used to come and chat with you?
Yes, sure.
What did you talk about?
Well, we talked about the war when he came back last fall.
Was he changed much over what he used to when he was a boy?
He had. He didn't look like he used to.
Mm-hmm.
Looked worn out.
Mm-hmm.
Sick.
Well, was he... now that he was a big shot, how did he act?
He acted more common than he did when he was a boy.
He did?
That's right.
Well, that's just like Ernie. Want to thank you, Glenn, for the pile lights you've given us. Now, before you get back to that hay, Promo Seltzer has for you, when all the harvests are in and you go hunting, this water-repellent, wind-resistant, lightweight windbreaker with a zippered front. Do you like the looks of that?
Thank you.
And, well, if not all, and for that cute boy of yours, the apple of your eye, something all boys want. It's 41 inches high, it's brown and white, it follows you around like a dog. It's not a dog, though, it's a pony. There he comes. has a special martingale bridle with inlaid metal and a saddle to match. Looks just like a Dean Autry outfit.
Thank you. Good luck to you, Glenn Jackson.
I bet you Ronnie is really tickled with that one. All right, Ed.
You know, most of us newspapermen remember most vividly Ernie Pyle's story of the grief of the GIs when the mule train brought down from the casino mountainside the body of Texas Captain Henry T. Wasco. And here with us tonight is the Texas boy of whom Ernie wrote. And he was Captain Wasco's runner, Private First Class Tex Tidwell of the famed 36th Division. Tex, what's your full name?
Riley M. Tidwell.
Riley M. Tidwell, and how old are you, Riley?
21 years old.
Where were you born?
I was born in Teague, Texas.
In Teague, Texas?
Yes.
And I suppose, like most GIs, you're an old married man.
Yes, I am. I've been married 6 months.
6 months? How tall are you, Private?
I'm 6'4".
6'4". Someday you're going to fall down in Dallas and you're going to land right head first in Houston. You know that. Now, with the 36th Division, there were a lot of Congressional Medal of Honor winners. Did you know any of them?
Yes, I remember one very well. Commando Kelly.
Now, just a moment there, big, tall Texas boy. Commando Kelly came from Pennsylvania.
Well, Ed, since Kelly was such a rough and tough guy, us Texans just taking him in as... Forgive him for being a Yankee.
Well, I'm not going to be offended at that because, actually, I'm a Southern boy, too. I come from South Brooklyn. Now, that Captain Wasco, of whom Ernie wrote that great story, he was a great character, wasn't he?
He was, yes.
Where was he killed?
He was killed on Hill 1205, overlooking Casino.
And that night that they brought down his body and you arranged his clothing for him, as you see it in the picture, you then showed Ernie Pyle the will that the captain had left among his personal belongings, didn't you?
Yes, I did, Ed.
What was in that will?
In the will was, right on the bottom I wrote in pencil, was a note to his mother. And it said in the note, "Mother, when you pray, pray for the boys in my company."
That was the last thought of Captain Wasco.
Yes.
Now, on that day, I was talking to Hal Boyle, and on that day at Salerno, when the 36th Division was really taking a rugged beating from German tanks and from German artillery up on the mountainside, and the Coast Guard boats, I understand, had even come in to rescue the survivors of the 36th Division, did you Texans actually think of retreating?
No, Ed, we didn't. That reminds me of a boy that was in my outfit. He had around his neck a little bag of Texas soil that his mother had sent him. And when things looked the roughest, this boy poured the sand out along the beach and says, "Boys, this is Texas. We go no further."
And what happened?
Ed, we stuck.
Of the 183 men who are on the beach that day at Salerno in Company B, how many are left?
Right now, there are 21 of us.
21 out of 183.
Yes.
The 36 covered a lot of ground from Salerno through Casino, Naples, Anzio, and Rome, didn't it, Private?
Right. The last one I was on, we walked 240 miles.
How many days?
28 days.
Fighting all the way along?
Yes.
Your outfit went into Naples and then went into Rome, too?
Yes.
Now, when you met Ernie Pyle, do you ever remember seeing him wear a helmet?
No, I don't. He always wore a little knit cap.
That must have made a fine picture. You, 6'4", and Ernie was about how tall?
I don't know. I don't remember. I guess he was 5'6" or 5'8", mm-hmm. Something like that.
Well, now, what would you Texans say was the toughest fighting outfit you saw in Europe?
Well, Ed, I tell you, the little group of Japanese fighters, the 100th Infantry, I believe was about the best I saw.
Those Japanese-American boys?
Yes.
What would your advice be to the country, to remember that?
To remember those boys.
Fine. Now, Tex, thank you very, very much for this thrilling story of the 36th Division. Bromo Seltzer has for you first. We understand you have 90 points, so Bromo Seltzer is going to outfit you from head to foot in a snappy civilian outfit. Number two, and for your young bride, a match set of beautiful luggage, a fortnighter, a weekender, and an overnight bag for your delayed honeymoon. Thank you very much, Private First Class Texas.
And now, a story of fisherman's luck told by our good friend Ernest Chappell.
Thank you, Warren. Well, friends, it seems there was this fellow who started on an all-day fishing trip feeling bright as a new penny.
Boy, what a swell day. Just wait till those big fellas start biting.
But along about noontime...
Phew, what heat. Noon already, and all I've got to show for the morning is a headache and a queasy stomach. Might as well just give up and go home.
Say, not so fast there. Don't be easy bait for ordinary headache. Just tackle that headache misery with quick-acting Bromo Seltzer.
Bromo Seltzer, do you say? Will it help my stomach, too?
It sure will, and in a hurry. Bromo Seltzer is a three-way acting product. Gives you fast relief from ordinary headache, plus the upset stomach and jittery nerves that may accompany it. You'll find no faster, more effective relief than Bromo Seltzer. Remember, Bromo Seltzer has given up-to-the-minute relief to four generations. Buy a bottle from your druggist tonight, and then...
Thanks, Ernie, and a good old Bromo Seltzer train. And now back to Indianapolis' huge Coliseum with thousands of Hoosiers, including hundreds of GIs. If you heard Hedda the Hat, our good friend Hedda Hopper, tonight, you know that on her program she chose the story of G.I. Joe as her treat of the week and reviewed the picture. Thanks a lot, Hedda. We saw it last night, and we agree with Hedda. And we understand that General Eisenhower says it's the greatest war picture he's seen. And by the way, the entire proceeds from its premiere in Indianapolis this week will go to the Ernie Pyle Memorial Fund. And now we want you to meet the man who's chairman of the committee for the fund here, and an old college crony of Ernie's, from Indianapolis and Indiana University class of 24, Barrett Woodsmall. Barrett, let's be serious for a minute. What's the purpose of the Ernie Pyle Memorial Fund?
It's an Ernie Pyle Memorial Fund for scholarships in journalism at Indiana University.
You mean for deserving students in
journalism? For deserving students, yes, sir.
I see. Is it open for public contribution?
It certainly is, and they can send their contributions just to Indiana University, Bloomington, Indiana.
Well, it's a very worthy fund, I can tell you that. Do you remember how you met Ernie?
Well, no, I don't just remember. He was around, and he kind of grew on you.
Well, and he finally got to be a big man on the campus, though, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He was very active in campus affairs and the daily student, and he's the first football manager, a student manager of football that we had.
Well, what did they think of his writing when he was on the daily student?
Well, curiously enough, it was criticized because he wrote so simply.
How do you mean?
Well, he'd start every sentence or paragraph with thee, and he used very simple words, and I guess they thought a college writer should use bigger words.
Well, that's very interesting. He didn't have much money, did he?
No, he had his troubles, as we all did.
Yeah, well, what did he do to get extra money?
Oh, he did a lot of things. He played auto polo, and he drove little dirt track race cars.
He did? He finally got to be a racetrack driver.
Yes, he drove in several of them.
Did he have itchy feet when he was in college?
Oh, yes. Yes, he always wanted to travel.
Did he get away anytime?
Yes, he wanted to go to Japan with a baseball team, and he did go.
Well, tell us about it.
Well, he got a job as a cabin boy on the steamship, and he got over to Japan all right, and then he found he couldn't get off with the baseball team because he'd signed for the round trip, and he had to go on to China and to Manila, I believe, and all he saw in Japan was when they stopped in port again to pick the team up to bring him home.
Well, he had quite a sense of humor, didn't he?
He had a great sense of humor.
Well, is there any time that you remember that...
Well, yes, one night, Hoagy Carmichael and John Schumacher, who's now president of our city council, and Ernie and myself decided to take a trip to Chicago. So we pooled what money we had, which wasn't much, and entrusted to Ernie. We went down to the railroad station and crawled into a dark baggage car. The train was late in leaving, so Ernie whispered to me, "Let's get off." And we got off and left Hoagy and John on the train.
Indiana University gave him a new degree last year, didn't they? A doctor of human letters? Were
yes,
you there?
Yes, they did. Yes, I was.
Did Ernie make a speech?
No, he wouldn't even appear down there until he promised him he wouldn't have to speak.
Well, didn't he say anything?
Well, yes, he made the remark after the ceremony that it was over to President Wells, how can I take this darn thing off?
That hat and gown.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds just like Ernie. Well, thank you very much, Barrett, for adding to the background of Ernie's life. And now Bromo Seltzer has for you to present to Mrs. Woodsmall a shell pink bed jacket of Marabou. And I bet she'll love that. And she'll probably make you bring her breakfast in bed. And for you to take on those pheasant blitzes out in South Dakota, this fine firearm. It's a Browning Savage automatic shotgun with recoil pad and sling swivels. Good luck and good hunting. Barrett Woodsmall. Thank you.
You know, probably the war correspondent most intimate with Ernie Pyle in Europe was the Missourian who went from Kansas City to the New York office of the Associated Press and served in four European campaigns with Ernie. I present to you now the Pulitzer Prize winner, Hal Boyle. Hal, I am glancing very enviously at those five service stripes on your sleeve there. I'd like to have been over with you fellas.
You can have them.
Hal, when did you first meet Ernie Pyle in Europe?
I first met Ernie in December 1942 in a small French hotel in Oran, Africa. Ernie was down with one of his famous colds, and it was about up to his ears. And he'd run out of handkerchiefs, and he was cursing the United States government because it had printed a blue book describing Africa as having a hot, dry climate.
Well, how you say he had those colds? He was only a little fellow, wasn't he?
Just big enough for cold.
Just for small cold.
Yeah.
How about, what did he weigh?
He weighed about 113 on a heavy day.
Now, Hal, was Ernie the type of newspaper man that the movie fans became familiar with in front page? Did he cuss and drink and smoke?
Well, he wasn't averse to taking a drink or a smoke, and when a jeep stalled, he knew the proper word to use.
A special vocabulary for jeeps.
That's right.
Didn't Ernie once file a story that he had a premonition of death?
No, Ernie never filed a story to that effect. The story was printed, and it was true that Ernie did have a premonition of his death, but he was very embarrassed about it and was angry because it was printed, because really he was a very modest guy, and he didn't like the attention drawn to him. He knew that hundreds and thousands of men would be killed, and it seemed to him a little presumptuous for him to be quoted as having a premonition one way or another.
You know, I think that the people through the country get a great kick out of it if you tell them just how he wrote his column. You saw him, you were with him in four campaigns. Could you describe just about the way he'd sit down and file?
Yeah, Ernie would come back after several days in the field with the infantry. Then he would try to find a room with enough heat in it to keep his bones from aching, and then he'd haul out that little typewriter, and he'd set to work. He never took any notes in the field, just the names of the men. He'd write them on any scrap of paper he had at hand.
Would that be on a typewriter?
No, he'd just with a pencil in the field. Then he'd come back and think over what he'd seen and gone through, and he'd start to write. And he wrote about three drafts. He'd write it out first on the typewriter. Then he'd take his typewritten draft and go over it carefully with pencil. And then he would type it a third time.
Well, then that simplicity of his style was the result of painstaking care and darn good craftsmanship, wasn't it?
Like all simplicity, it's achieved through effort.
Mm-hmm. How did he react to fame when it hit him after years of just going along as a writer?
I think he was a little dazed. He couldn't believe this was happening to Ernie Pyle. Mm-hmm.
And how did the other correspondents, all the war correspondents, were they elated about him winning all the prizes? Were they a little, would you think there was a little envy there?
Well, there's always envy on something like that, but I couldn't say that I ever saw a man that begrudged anything that ever came to Ernie, because he earned so much more than he ever got.
Thank you very, very much, Hal. And Bromo Seltzer has for you something you can take home to your wife. First, the 17 jewel Gerard Perregaux, I trust I pronounced that right, wristwatch with a 14-carat gold case. Second, and knowing your hobby of collecting antique English Sheffield glass, here's something we hope you'll like, Hal. A tall, slender, glass antique cruet with a silver on copper collar, lip, and handle. Thank you very, very much, Hal Boyle, and good luck on your next assignment to the Pacific.
There's one sure way to get to third base with a simple headache, says Ernest Chappell.
That's right, Warren. Friends, when headache seems slated to win the day, when its companion nuisances, upset stomach and jittery nerves, are also teamed up against you, reach for fast-acting Bromo Seltzer and settle the score. For Bromo Seltzer gets right to work, brings relief not one, but three different ways. First, Bromo Seltzer brings rapid headache relief. Second, Bromo Seltzer helps relieve that upset stomach. Third, Bromo Seltzer helps soothe those jangled nerves. Yes, fast-dissolving, fast-acting Bromo Seltzer brings effective three-way relief, makes you feel three ways better, fast. You can take Bromo Seltzer after it settles or while it's still fizzing. Caution, use only as directed. For persistent or recurring headaches, see your doctor. Whenever headache interferes with work or play, try Bromo Seltzer for prompt threefold relief. Bromo Seltzer, a product of the Emerson Drug Company, comes in four popular sizes. Get a bottle from your druggist tonight. Get set to
fight headache three ways.
Back with 8,000 friends, neighbors, and admirers of Ernie Pyle in the huge Coliseum in Indianapolis. But before we go on, we want to tell you about next week. Vox Pop travels to Philadelphia to interview Army nurses who are there demonstrating their work overseas.
But you won't be along, Warren, old boy.
No, Ed. I'm drawing a furlough for a few weeks, and I'm sort of going home and get acquainted with the family.
Yeah, but who's going to team up with me?
Peter Donald. He's the fellow featured on Can You Top This?
Oh,
and a
surely.
Good man.
He certainly is, and be sure and listen and see if he can top you.
I will, Pat, Ed, I will. And now, two of the people about whom Ernie wrote very tenderly and lovingly. His father, 77, short, slight, and smiling. His Aunt Mary, 79, spry, sweet, and sociable. Mr. William C. Pyle and Mrs. Mary Bales. What did you say, Aunt Mary? What did you say just then?
I said, not so.
Not so? Oh, yes, very so. And I do want to call you Aunt Mary, if I may.
That's all right.
Well, what do you say we just sort of visit as though we were sitting on your porch looking out across the lawn to the stump where the wrens have a nest? Is that all right with you?
Huh?
Or do you mind these thousands of people out here?
No, I'll not look at them.
Well, they're just neighbors anyway. Mr. Pyle, are you sorry that Ernie went out in the world instead of staying on the farm?
No, sir.
You have to stand a little closer to the microphone, Mr. Pyle. You're not sorry? Why?
Because I'd rather he'd be out in the world and amount to something instead of staying around home and amount to nothing.
What, you mean he wasn't cut out for a farmer?
No, sir, he wasn't.
Well, he helped you, didn't he?
Yes, sir.
But he didn't like it, huh?
He didn't like it, but he worked all right.
Did he help you milk the cows?
No, sir.
Why not?
He couldn't learn.
You mean he couldn't learn to milk the cows?
No, sir. And the milk would grow up his sleeve instead of in the bucket. So I done the milking.
You did the milking, I see. Was there anything on the farm that he liked to do?
Yes, sir.
What?
He liked to help Thrice drive a team of horses to the tight bed.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did he first go away from home?
In 19.
Mm-hmm. Where?
He went to Champaign, Illinois. To college.
Yes. And what did he do there?
He
joined the Navy?
He joined the Navy.
Oh, I see. Did he like being in the Navy?
Yes, sir. He liked it.
Well, he wasn't in it long, was he?
No, not very long.
I see.
He was sorry when the armistice signed, so he wanted to go across.
Oh, he liked the Navy. I bet that's where he got his GI slant then. Was he good at writing when he was away?
Yes, sir. He wrote twice a week while he was in the United States. When he was overseas, he wrote about once a month.
He was a pretty good boy, wasn't he? Did you ever have to whip him?
No, sir.
Oh,
I never
did.
Huh? What's this, Aunt Mary? Someone had to whip him?
Yeah.
What for?
For racing a horse.
Oh, not supposed to race a farm horse. Aunt Mary, you do get around, we hear. What keeps you busy aside from taking care of the house?
Oh, I belong to the Missionary Society. I belong to the Sunday school class.
Mm-hmm.
And I belong to the Home Economic Club, and I belong to a social affair, the Merry Housewife, and we don't gossip nor play cards.
Oh, you mean the Merry Housewife, huh?
That's more than I belong to.
Well, what happy days do you remember when Ernie was a boy?
Well,
Well, I can't think.
You take it, Aunt Mary. Was it the threshing?
Oh, yes, the threshing dinners and the fried chicken, the jelly and such as that. He never cared. He didn't have a sweet tooth for pies or cakes or anything like that.
Yes, but he liked jelly?
He sure did.
Oh, and the fried chicken.
And the fried chicken.
Well, is that what you made for him when he came back from overseas?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
Every time he come home, we always aim to have fried chicken for him, for that's what he likes.
Well, Aunt Mary, you saw the picture last night, the story of G.I. Joe. What do you think of it?
Grand. It was grand.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he had described it in his column.
Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful fella, and he did his duty as he saw it, and you can always be glad and proud that you helped bring him up, can't you?
Yes,
and now, we want to thank you for coming all the way from Dana into Indianapolis to talk with us. So, Roma Seltzer has for you, to use on your forthcoming trips, a traveling bag for each of you, and a featherweight table model radio. It's a brand new Swingmaster that you can carry anywhere. You can take it out on the porch and listen to it. And here's something we know you'll both treasure. It's a pastel portrait of Ernie, done by Pat Cassidy, one of his boyhood pals. It'll be framed and on display in the Banner White Hill store window till the end of the week, and then it'll be sent to you. And we just want to say again, thank you and good luck. Mr. William Pyle and Mrs. Mary Vail. So nice to meet you.
We're sorry our next Bob Popper can't be with us here in Indianapolis. He's recently back from the Pacific for his wounded on the island of Iwo Jima and is now being treated at the Borden General Hospital in Chickasaw, Oklahoma. Chaplain V.B. Saucier. Thank you for making the trip into Oklahoma City to tell us about Ernie, Chaplain. And now, tell us what happened that day on Iwo Jima, Chaplain.
A volunteer is to go with me, explaining that it was a dangerous mission, as the Jap snipers were still firing. Four fellows volunteered, and we soon returned with the body. I was deeply impressed by the expressions on the faces of the great number of men of all ranks who came by to look upon the face of their hero. A person who didn't know would probably have said, "This man must have had many relatives." Two of the fellows made a casket, and at 11 o'clock a.m. on April 20th, we gave him a simple GI ceremony, no different from what was given any other serviceman. Ernie Pyle was laid to rest by the side of the road just off the beach on the island of Iwo Jima, among the soldiers and sailors with whom he lived, served, and died. We can pay no greater tribute to him than that which he paid to them. When we leave here for the next shore, there is nothing we can do for the ones beneath the wooden crosses, except perhaps to pause and murmur, "Thanks, pal."
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.